Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
To HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information on this, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, our friend Joanna Zine will be telling us a little bit about how the recent quarantine and isolation has impacted her mental health. So tell me a little bit about how you've coped with the whole mental health aspect of the recent isolation and quarantine and such.
Oh, well, first of all, Cam, thank you so much for inviting me back to your show.
My pleasure.
I just want to say how grateful I am to be able to share my story through your platform today. Because I didn't mention this last time when we were talking, but I had realized that just feeling gratitude for having friends in my life like you and close relationships with my family has been a huge factor in what has carried me through these times. And I just want to send out a quick prayer to all those people in the world who don't have similar support systems that I do, or might be, you know, feeling lonely or suffering in different ways. So yeah, I'm really grateful, and I hope that there's a way that we can spread more love to help lonely people cope through these really anxious and difficult times. For myself, it was really difficult in the first couple of months. Like I was saying previously, when everything started to change in March, it was sort of like a like a tsunami wave, I guess, because I'm an English as a second language teacher, and I teach students abroad in China, and so I was really getting a firsthand account of what was happening over there. And this was starting back in December and January and February. And so through those months, I had somehow convinced myself, like, it's okay, we're going to be okay. There's no way that this can spread. And I had a lot of faith, I guess, misplaced faith in our systems. And I don't think that there's any room for blame or anything like that, because what has happened is so unprecedented. But witnessing the suffering and struggles of my students and their families, I think I was in denial of that. Like for those months from December, January, February, my students were isolated inside with no contact from any outside family. They were not able to even exit their own buildings, and everything, all the supplies that they needed were delivered by messenger people. So fortunately, they had systems in place to take care of them. Like, they have a really good online shopping system and online economy. So those systems were really great for them, and they were able to, like, get through, you know, whatever they needed. But at the same time, like, some of my students who have relations, like their father is a doctor or a nurse or something working in the healthcare field, like one of my students didn't see her father for 4 months. And so she was really devastated by that. And I didn't think that it could come here. I don't know why.
When you say they were able to get things delivered, that include things such as medical and accessibility needs?
You know what, Cam, that's a really good question that I didn't ask. As far as I'm aware of, they were able to get deliveries of prescriptions that they had already had scripts for from their family doctor. They were able to get groceries and other household supplies. But as far as, like, disability aids, I don't know.
So how have you gone about coping with the strain since things came over here and it became sort of a local issue as well?
Like I said, I had a really difficult time in the beginning because I was probably like so many other people listening to the news from morning until night. And I thought that it was really important at that time because there was so much going on, I didn't want to miss a single moment of news that was coming out. And when I didn't realize until it was too late and I started to have really severe anxiety attacks, was that I was causing myself harm and overwhelming myself and not really focusing on self-care. And I should have been more conscientious of that because I've been diagnosed with general anxiety disorder, and I've had that for most of my life. So, but really, I really wasn't taking care of myself. So it was really hard for me. It's hard for me even to talk about now. Like I don't fully remember March and April. Like it's sort of gray.
So, for all those out there who might be in the same situation, dealing with this on top of anxiety, what message would you send them?
It's so hard to say, Cam, because we go through these ups and downs, and when we're down, like, I don't know if people have, I'll just say my experience. When I'm down and I don't know when I'm going to come back up again. It's like I'm underwater. And I'm going through the motions. It's really hard to explain how to go through self-care until you like sort of start to come up again, and then you remember like, oh yeah, these are the systems that I had in place like to sort of protect myself from this, and I forgot all about them for the last 2 months or however long period of time. But one thing that I really underestimated the value of was my medication. So I did want to spend a little time talking about the medication that I'm taking. It's called buspirone, and I've been prescribed the 10 milligram pill. So what happens is if I'm feeling a trigger, which would be like a shortness of breath, fatigue, slight chest pain, numbness in my arms, headache, could even be a little bit of nausea or shortness of breath. Those are my anxiety triggers. And so you have to focus on yourself and think like, and write it down what your personal triggers are, and then take the prescribed dose from your doctor on time. Because when I feel the trigger and I think that I can get through it on my own, like through whatever breathing exercises, like it's maybe that's okay for some people, but for me, I really need to take the medication because it helps me to calm down so quickly and I feel so much better. So now I just take half of the pill when I get those triggers. But if I think that it's going to be something more overwhelming, I'll take the full pill.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
This next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Melissa Miner, who will be telling us a little bit about how she's coped the whole mental health aspect of the COVID quarantine. So how have you coped with the whole isolation and mental health aspect of the whole COVID situation?
There have been parts that have been very challenging because I need to see people like my psychologist or my psychiatrist, and I haven't been able to see them. I've only been able to telephone them. And they can usually see just by looking at me whether or not I'm doing well or the severity of how well or unwell I am doing. So in that regard, like it's been difficult, and I've come to use Zoom to connect with some people, and that's okay too. But it's not the same as like going to coffee exchange and getting a coffee, you know. I was running a running club, but that had to shut down because, you know, we can't run within close proximity of each other. So it's like some very important things in my life for me, it's like have been taken away. So it's been hard to cope with that, but every day it gets a little easier to cope with because every day it becomes like the new normal.
So you do a lot of running and a lot of really intense exercises. Has that served at all to help be a distraction or to ease some of the tensions?
Yeah, my psychiatrist always asks me, how far did you run today? You know, yesterday I did 21 kilometers, today I did 11 kilometers. And it helps me to just sort of clear out my mind, and it helps my mental health in general. And you know the studies that show that the endorphin rush when you run is good for you, and apparently it also helps my medication regime. When I'm running, I don't have to be on as much medication as if I'm not running or doing any physical exercise and just lying around. So
you've mentioned in previous interviews you have some family members with disabilities, and I know right now a lot of people aren't able to get the services they normally do. Has there been any impact on you or your family there?
Yes, my one brother, he was hit of his job. But the thing is he has intellectual disability, and the job that he was laid off from was a grocery store. So they laid off one person from the grocery store, and it was him. And so I'm very angry about that. And I feel that's not fair. And he's very upset because he's been working there for 20 years. And he's very upset. He has nothing to do. He doesn't have a structure. And my little brother, he needs structure and routine. Otherwise, he lets his mind wanders and he starts getting into things and getting into trouble. They have epilepsy, very serious epilepsy, and they have not been able to see their neurologist because of the COVID stuff. They have been able to get their prescriptions renewed. That's not been a problem, but they haven't been able to have appointments.
So, have there been any positive aspects of this whole situation for you?
I've done a lot of painting. I've done a lot of practicing on the piano. Me and my cat have a very close relationship now.
Always important.
Always important. And I've learned to use Zoom and how to talk to people online using video chat, which is something I didn't do in the past. So I would say like some new skills were learned, and I've gotten some good things done too with like the painting and the piano, and you know, there's been a couple of puzzles along the way too, a couple of thousand piece puzzles that I've also worked on. And so it's just getting used to the slow down of life, I guess. Like all these things really contribute to getting used to the slow down of life.
So do you see yourself taking these new skills and the positive aspects forward, even when the situation is resolved and the world gets back to normal?
Yeah, like I won't use FaceTime chat or Zoom chat if I don't have to. but I will for long distance relationships, like with my cousin or something, or like my family in Ottawa and Petawawa. So like, but other than that, like I would minimize the face, that Zoom and FaceTime and that sort of thing, and I would replace it with actual interactions with people. But when it comes to slowing life down and, you know, you kind of have to stretch out your activities to make them last a little longer so your day goes by a little quicker, it's kind of a nice little lesson in just being mindful of what you're doing and being appreciative of what you're doing in that moment. And, you know, and not always living a life where you always have to multitask. It's okay to sit and work on a puzzle for 2 hours. And when this pandemic is over, it's still okay to sit and work on a puzzle for 2 hours.
So what message would you send to the community about what you've learned in all this and what your hopes are for them?
I learned a lot through all this, but the message I would send to the community is still stay in touch with people, like do your best to stay in touch and to reach out to people and to try to help people, even if it's remotely, even if it's from home, and to also to be safe, avoid large crowds, just to keep this pandemic at a minimum, and you know, listen to the professionals. I would also encourage people not to listen to social media posts. I would encourage people to listen to actual professionals, epidemiologists, microbiologists, scientists, doctors, and not just random social media articles, you know, because those can get out of hand too. I would just advise to just be thankful to have this time where we can slow down, because when things speed up again, we'll be back into our busy lives and we'll be back into multitasking and stuff, and we'll yearn back for this time where we had to spend all this time at home and it was so boring and all that stuff. But really, we can be mindful and thankful for this time.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Advertise with CJAM 99.1 FM. We offer the most flexible and competitive rates for radio advertising in Windsor, Detroit. Our diverse programming can fit the needs of a range of organizations and businesses. Choose between daily rates for broad coverage or sponsor a show and target a specific audience. CJAM staff will work with you to craft your ad and choose the airtime that suits your needs. For more information, email statcjam@gmail.com. Call 519-253-3000, extension 2525, or go to cjam.ca/advertise.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information on this, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Joanna Zine and Melissa Miner. Each shared their story of how they're keeping strong during the isolation and the mental health situations that come with it.
This segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Rosemary Fiss from the Alzheimer's Society. So tell me a little bit about your work with the Alzheimer's Society.
So my role currently with the Alzheimer's Society of Windsor-Essex County is that I'm the Director of Programs. So I oversee all of our programs and services.
And can you give me an overview of some of the work that you do?
Certainly. So the Alzheimer's Society of Windsor-Essex serves anybody who has a dementia diagnosis and their care partners, as well as the general public in terms of understanding dementia and Alzheimer's disease. So that begins with people who are seeking a diagnosis. We don't diagnose, but we can help link people with the appropriate resources in the community and provide them with education and support around that diagnosis. So what does it mean? Any information they might want about programs that are available to them, as well as information about the disease and the disease process.
I was just going to say, I'm guessing that includes things like clearing up myths about the conditions.
Absolutely, and that's often a big piece of people who are calling into our services at the beginning. Often people are hesitant about seeking a diagnosis because of some of those myths and the stigma that surrounds that. And we really want people to know that they're going to be supported, and the best thing that they can do is actually, if they're noticing some changes in their cognition, to go talk to their family physician. That's the best first place to start and really get to understanding what's going on.
So are there any challenges in clearing up these myths, getting people to actually recognize what this condition is and what it means?
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest myths is that for people not to go and seek the diagnosis itself because of the stigma. There's also an assumption that all forgetfulness, if I forget something, if I have a memory lapse, that it is automatically Alzheimer's disease. And that's certainly not true at all. There are many different things that can cause loss of memory. And it's not necessarily a diagnosis of dementia, or that dementia is not necessarily caused by Alzheimer's disease. So we really want people to understand that there are so many varying factors. And there are some things that can cause those shifts in cognition that are reversible. There are things that we can do that, you know, other things that might be going on that primary care physician can assist with. That's a big thing. There's a myth sometimes that people have, or a perception that every person who has a dementia diagnosis will become angry or physically aggressive. And that's not true either. We, as humans, all have emotions, and we have different ways of choosing, of expressing that emotion, those emotions. And not every person with Alzheimer's disease, not every person with dementia will become physically aggressive.
So
one of the best things that we can do is to really explore what is causing those changes in cognition, get the appropriate medical help, and then get the appropriate social help as well.
So you raise an interesting point, in so much as people don't always become aggressive or angry. But the thing is, when you can't remember something, some people would see that as a source of frustration. So
absolutely.
Could be where the myth comes from.
Yeah, absolutely. The person's ability to communicate is shifted because of the dementia as well. So the frustration that you just mentioned in terms of loss of memory, and then add that to a shift in how that person is understanding people communicating around them, as well as their ability to communicate with other people, can be so extremely frustrating.
So.
And that person's perceptions may change in terms of how they see the environment around them, how they understand the world around them can change. So all of those things are so impactful, and it's every single day. It's every day that person is walking through things. So part of the programs that we want to offer in terms of education and support is supporting not only that person with a diagnosis, but also their care partner, in terms of what are some strategies that we can develop to help make that environment easier with that diagnosis? What are some things that we can do in terms of memory supports, environmental supports, things like that, just to make things more manageable?
So, in your time with the Society, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
I think every person who is courageous enough to walk through our front door is a success story. It takes a lot to reach out and say, this is what's going on and I'm here for some help. So every person that does that, I'm so grateful for them. Beyond the education and support, we offer in-home respite programs, and we have adult day programs, and we have wellness programs, and all kinds of different things that are happening to try and keep people engaged and active and heard. So those are really, really important things to be able to do. One story comes to mind of a person that I was working with a number of years ago. It was a gentleman whose wife had a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. And she had always been the person who took care of their household. And now with her diagnosis, she wasn't able to do things in the same way. And so he was struggling with trying to be her caregiver and take care of the house and do laundry and cook and do all of these things. And so as we were talking about it, and having him express all of this real frustration, we kind of stepped back and looked at, her frustration in it as well, because all of a sudden he was taking over her role and she was being told to go sit down. And so we worked together as the three of us, and found a way of her still being able to be really active in the roles that she loved, being in the kitchen and helping out with those things, but in a way that she was supported now. And it made all the difference for both of them, not just for her, but for him as well. And they were able to find this great way of navigating their new roles together in a way that was really supportive and beneficial for both of them.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
All right. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
My pleasure.
My friends, in hard times such as these, it's a combination effort to keep at our best. It's not just about what we can do physically to occupy ourselves or to keep active. It's also about keeping the mind at its best, doing what you can to remember the good things in life. That doesn't matter if you're a young person or if you're a senior. Fact is, keeping the mind active, keeping the body active, working together will always keep us at our best. Truth is, there's always something we can do to improve the situation, whether it's getting out there and doing some exercises, or it's something to enrich our minds, doing those things we've been putting off, exploring our capabilities, and honestly, that's what this time has done for a lot of people. It's interesting to see in the midst of a tragic situation what people are doing to turn it into something of an opportunity to get done those things they never thought they would, to find out something about themselves. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.